All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is L Boogie. Today is October the 7th, Thursday, October the 7th, and you're back on with listening to L Boogie. And we're not going to really cover today any current events. I set aside this particular episode to cover two religious cult incidents that caused a lot of black people to perish. Basically, running behind two notorious cult leaders that, when everything was said and done, a whole bunch of people end up dying, and the great majority of them were black folk. We're going to cover James Warren Jones. He was a cult leader of the People's Temple back in the 70s. And his incident was the Jonestown Massacre. We're also going to cover David Koresh. He was the leader of the Branch Davidian Seventh-day Adventist Church. And his downfall and the people that followed behind him was the Waco Siege. We're going to cover these two incidents of black folk following behind white cult leaders as soon as we return from this message. See you guys in a minute. Peace. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to cover our first cult leader. And his name is Jim Jones. Source is Rolling Stone magazine article from May 29th, 2020. A look back at the infamous 1978 mass murder suicide, one of the most harrowing tragedies in American history. Okay. Until the September 11th attack, the tragedy in Jonestown on November 18th, 1978 represented the largest number of American civilian casualties in a single non-natural event. It is unfathomable now, as it was then, that more than 900 Americans, members of a San Francisco-based religious group called the People's Temple, died after drinking poison at the urging of their leader, the Reverend Jim Jones, in a secluded South American jungle settlement. Photographs taken after the carnage forever documented the sheer enormity of the event. The bodies of hundreds of people, including children, lying face down in the grass. Nearly 40 years later, the infamous and horrific event continues to fascinate us through numerous books, articles, and documentaries. All right. The story of Jonestown begins with Jones, a white minister who preached unconventional socialist and progressive ideas to a predominantly African-American congregation called the People's Temple. At the height of its popularity during the 1970s, the temple had a membership estimated in the thousands and was courted by local politicians in San Francisco, including Harvey Milk. By 1977, Jones had grown paranoid from the media scrutiny over the temple's suspicious activities, so he and his numerous followers moved to an agricultural settlement, aka Jonestown, in Guyana, the remote country east of Venezuela. Concern over the welfare of those in the jungle encampment prompted U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan to visit Jonestown in 1978, November. After checking out the settlement, Ryan was shot to death along with four other people by Temple gunmen at an airstrip. Following those murders, Jones commanded his followers to drink cyanide-laced punch, starting with the children first. In all, there were over 900 who died in Jonestown, including Jim Jones, who was found dead of a gunshot wound to the head. There is speculation that he may have taken his own life, or that his nurse, Annie Moore, fatally shot him before she killed herself in the same manner. Decades later, survivors of Jonestown still remember being a part of a church organization that they devoted a good portion of their lives to. "People were incredible," says Gene Clancy, who worked on the Temple's newspaper. "People were capable of committing themselves to something outside of their own self-interest," added Laura Johnson Cole, another former Temple member. "We, all of us, were doing the right thing, but with the wrong leader." Today, the legacy of Jonestown has been reduced to a popular expression of drinking the Kool-Aid. Okay, I'm gonna take a short break, and then I'm gonna come back with some more information on the same cult leader from another source. All right. We're going to continue on. All right, I have another source of information on this guy. And it comes from Josh Edwards. And it's remembering a real horrific or horror story, so to speak. "As our community prepares for the family-friendly festival of ghosts and ghouls that is Halloween, I present to you a real-life horror story. No haunted house, play, or creep show could ever compare to the absolute horror that befell 909 men, women, children at the People's Temple Agricultural Project in Jamestown, Guyana on November 18, 1978. More than a dozen of them had rooted roots in Vicksburg and Warren County." Okay. "Jim Jones had promised his followers a paradise of equity in the jungle of South America. There, Jones had pledged all of God's children, black and white, rich and poor, could live in harmony. Instead, Jones gave a gruesome death to the weak, huddled masses he had preyed upon. Gloria Faye Warren, who was born in Vicksburg in 1959, believed in him, as did her sister Janice Marie and Brenda Ann Warren. So did Gloria's young children, Emmett and Camilla, and her precious niece, Dana. Hazel Marie Noel was born here in 1927. So also bought Jones' message of love, peace, and equality. Jones also didn't care about the color of her skin or the fact that her parents had been sharecroppers or their parents slaves. Jones' message of equality that swept up Novell, I'm sure, also appealed to her children, Alan, Christopher, Carl, Jennifer, and Shirley. Shirley's son, Isaac, was born into the traditions of People's Temple when it was in San Francisco. They believed in Jim Jones, but why? Jones began his career as a politically progressive Disciple of Christ minister in Indiana during the Civil Rights Movement. He preached that God's command was to love thy fellow man, regardless of race or economic status. Jones' message resounded with African Americans who had spent virtually every moment since emancipation struggling for equal rights. But eventually, any mention of Jesus left from Jones' sermon. If you want me to be your brother, I'll be your brother. If you want me to be your father, I'll be your father. If you want me to be your God, I'll be your God. One of the surviving People's Temple members recalled Jones saying during a sermon, "The lack of Jesus in Jones' preaching didn't matter to Warren or Noel's families. They were believers. They would follow Jones to their death, and they did. He had loved them when no one else would. He was their father, their brother, and their living incarnation of God. Jones used mind control tactics on his church members. He isolated them from the outside world, turned them against each other, and told them to reject anyone who was not a member of the temple. After the temple members moved to Guyana in 1977, Jones began instituting what he called white knights, basically practicing for how the congregation would handle a U.S. invasion. America was the enemy, Jones said. America who had oppressed his flock, he said. One of these plans was committing that what Jones called revolutionary suicide by drinking punch laced with cyanide. But what happened in Jonestown in November 1978 was far from mass suicide that led to the phrase, "Don't drink the Kool-Aid." Jones had become a punchline, a catchphrase, an icon for mindless or blind loyalty. Massacre survivor Tim Carter wrote in a 2006 essay, "The blind loyalty, I say, is exactly what Jones wanted us outsiders to believe. We all fell for it. So could we blame his followers?" What really happened, said Carter, who fled into the jungle after witnessing Jones ordering his followers to poison their children and the elderly, was murdered. Jones ordered his inner circle to murder U.S. Rep. Leo Ryan, who had traveled to visit the temple. Then he used Ryan's death as an opportunity to order his followers to murder each other as armed guards watched. In an audio tape of the last hours of Jonestown, children Dana, Isaac, and Camilla, among them, can be heard wailing in the background as they are lined up to be executed by their own parents. "Don't be afraid to die. If these people land out here, they'll torture some of our children here. They'll torture our people. They'll torture our seniors. We cannot have this," Jones tells the followers on the tape amid the gut-wrenching sound of children screaming and choking on the poison. Tim Carter was tasked with going back to Jonestown after the massacre to help identify the bodies in what was the largest single loss of American civilians lives since 9/11. The majority of people, Carter says, had marks where they had been injected with poison. "I'm sure those that were forcibly injected with poison would be angst and shocked to hear that they were ready to die and that the struggle of their lives became instead an icon for merely weak surrendering." Among the bodies, Carter found his own wife clutching their child. I imagine Gloria Warren was clutching her children too. Okay. When we return, we're going to cover our next sick, manipulating individual, David Koresh. See you in a minute. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to go over some information from a Rolling Stone article about David Koresh and his demise along with his followers. We're going to cover the events leading up to David Koresh becoming the leader of the Vance Davidians and the end result. All right. Federal agents rammed armored vehicles into fortified buildings as flames engulfed religious cult leader David Koresh and over 75 of his men, women, and child followers. Most died in the smoke and fire with their beliefs that the world would end, a fulfilled prophecy of sorts. That was April 19, 1993 in Waco, Texas. People across the country turned into national news stations to see agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and FBI descend upon the Branch Davidian compound called Mount Carmel in search for illegal amassed weapons. They watched the initial shootout between the two parties evolve into a 51-day standoff and the botched negotiation that ended with images of citizens willing to arm themselves and fight to the death against a tyrannical government. Who were the Branch Davidians? In the 1930s, Bulgarian immigrant Victor Hutev broke away from his community of Seventh-day Adventists to start the Davidian movement at Mount Carmel. The title Davidian referred to Hutef's first publication, The Shepherd's Rod, in which he wrote that the term derived from biblical King David and dedicated to bringing forth the restoration of David's kingdom in antitype. Upon the throne of which Christ, the son of David, is to sit. Essentially, he believed that Christ would come to earth and establish a divine kingdom. After Hutef died in 1955, his wife Florence took over the Davidian sect and gathered hundreds of followers at Mount Carmel for Judgment Day. Her prediction was a bust and led to the Davidians being split into the Branch Davidians by Benjamin and Lewis Roden. Benjamin then told his followers that Christ would come for them once they matured. When Benjamin died in 1978, Lois took the lead and began preaching that the Holy Spirit was feminine in nature. She eventually passed away and lost control to her son George in 1986, according to the Los Angeles Times. Koresh, who had entered into a romantic relationship with Lois, is, in previous years, disliked the new leader and claimed he was exhumed a body of church grounds in attempt to resurrect it. In 1987, Koresh and seven of his followers stormed Mount Carmel and shot George. Then on trial for attempted murder, he was acquitted, according to PBS News. Koresh's case declared a mistrial. He told the jury that they went to the compound to find evidence of the exhumed body and shot a tree on the property. He told them that. Who was David Koresh? Actually, Koresh wasn't his real name, born to a teenage mother, the cult leader was born Vernon Wayne Howell in Houston in 1959. He would tell the FBI that he never knew his father and had a lonely childhood living with his grandparents. He dropped out of high school, and with a head full of Bible verses, he joined his mother's church of Seventh-day Adventists. He was expelled for misbehaving and moved to California in hopes of becoming a rock guitarist. In 1981, when he was 22 years old, he joined the Branch Davidian at Mount Carmel, where he began studying under the Lois Roden. It was after Lois's death and George's shooting that he assumed control of the church in 1990. He renamed himself David Koresh for publicity and business purposes. The name Koresh is Hebrew for Cyrus, the ancient Persian king, and by taking the name, he was announcing that he was the heir to the king, to King David's throne. Twisted. Koresh imposed his new power by taking spiritual wives in the form of adult women and girls as young as 12 that would give him future leaders of the world. He told his followers that he was the Lamb of God from the book of Revelation, who could interpret the seven seals containing the secrets of the end of the world. Wow. Followers told ABC News that Koresh predicted that the government would attack and had them amass an arsenal of guns and ammunition. Former child bride Carrie Jewell later testified before Congress that Koresh molested her and had over 20 wives. Joanne Vega, who was 6 years old when she left the Davidians, told ABC reporters that Koresh shared his apocalyptic views with his followers and believed that they were the chosen people to survive because David was the son of God and were preparing for war and the end times. What happened in Waco? On February 28, 1993, the ATF cited evidence that cult members were amassing illegal weapons tried to execute a warrant on the Branch Davidians at Mount Carmel. A two-hour gunfight resulted in the deaths of six Davidians and four agents. No one knows who initially pulled the trigger. During the standoff, the FBI used sleep deprivation tactics on the Davidians, including floodlighting the compound and playing sounds of rabbits being killed, according to the New York Times. 10 days before the fire, Koresh offered to surrender himself to FBI agents if one of his sermons were broadcast on a national radio station. But the government mishandled negotiations and failed to pursue a resolution. Then, on April 19, 1993, national news teams captured footage of the government using military-grade tear gas on the fiery compound, where over 75 people died, a third of them children. Koresh was among those who were shot by their fellow cult members. Few survived the carnage. Critics have long argued that the FBI started the fire, while others blame the agency for screwing up negotiations and flexing their muscles too much, in a report by NPR. Loyola University religious studies professor Catherine Winziger said if the FBI believed that they were dealing with members of a cult who were not in their right minds, then why would the FBI put so much pressure on them and then ultimately carry out an assault, which just confirmed David Koresh's prophecies? Who started the fire? For months after Waco, a federal grand jury indicted 12 Davidians for aiding and abetting the murder of agents and illegal possession of firearms, according to the Texas Monthly. Eight were acquitted of murder, but, served varying sentences on firearms-related offenses. By 2007, everyone was out of prison. Even after the arrest, many Americans were left asking, who started the fire? In 1999, then-U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno selected U.S. Senator John Dansworth from Missouri to evaluate the federal government handling of the standoff. It took 14 months and $17 million for Dansworth to find that the government did not cause the fire and did not direct gunfire at Branch Davidian Complex, according to his report. Dansworth did mention failing of the FBI and the Department of Justice to disclose evidence of tear gas, but concluded that the responsibility for the fire rests with certain of the Branch Davidians and their leader, Vernon Howell, also known as David Koresh. And that's the end of that. Once we return from this short break, I'm going to give a commentary on both of these special individuals, for lack of a better word. See you guys in a minute. Peace. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're back. We're listening to El Boogie. And I'm going to give brief commentary on these two individuals. I'll say again that although there were African Americans that were part of the Branch Davidians, they weren't the bulk of individuals that perished in the fire. There was several other people, British, I think people from New Zealand, people from Great Britain or whatever, several different groups. But when it comes to Jim Jones, almost 1,000 black people perished running behind this fool. It is unconscionable. It's like, when you think about it, when I think about it, I remember the news as a child, as a kid back in the 70s. I remember when they covered it on TV. I also remember watching a movie. It was a mini series that came on television about the whole thing. I mean, today it's, unfortunately, some of our people still had a state of mind where they're willing to follow a white man or white people into the abyss, so to speak, but not so much literally, hopefully, but figuratively, maybe in politics. I'll use the last election as an example. Same thing, putting all your hopes and dreams and aspirations into a man, any man, no matter what color, but in most cases, it's a white man. We have to do better. We have to stop doing that. You're not supposed to put all your eggs in one basket, and that's including trusting human beings, mere mortals, to do the right thing when they have so much power, and then it gets to a point where they have so much power, they lose sight of what they're actually supposed to be standing for. I really believe they start out, thinking that they can make a difference in people's lives, but somehow it gets twisted and it turns into something else. Just as me giving people the benefit of the doubt, even though at some point Jim Jones stopped even talking about Jesus. It was all about him. I'll be your brother, sister, or God or whatever. And he knows God at the end. And this fool had jokers running around with guns that, you know, he had people believing that they were doing the right thing by killing their own folks. Because I remember seeing pictures of it as a kid, of the bodies just piled on top of each other, like they lined up, drunk the cyanide-based Kool-Aid, and just fell dead, holding on to each other like, my goodness. You know, that trauma, I believe, post-traumatic slavery disorder and our religious indoctrination that, you know, white Jesus is very damaging, you know, to a lot of black people, to a lot of our people. So people are willing to follow a white man to their death. It's sad, and it's just, you know, it's just sad. But I wanted to go over these two individuals for the purpose of showing that in history past, and history does repeat itself, but history past shows that, you know, people have to think for themselves. And you just don't look. We have a thing with looking for a messiah, looking for one individual that's going to come along and solve all our problems. That's not ever going to happen. To me, it has to be a collective effort of grassroots people and people taking responsibilities for certain aspects of moving towards independence as a people and prosperity. It can't be a thing where you're sitting around waiting for one man. And to me, that comes from our religious indoctrination as far as waiting for Jesus to return to save us. You know, when the Bible is written in parables, and the Bible could have several meanings that people take literally, the apocalypse and everything else, even though you can see signs in the way things are going that the Bible, things, events in the Bible are somewhat, you know, fulfilling, being fulfilled today. But at the same time, people take things literally and is looking for one person, you know, by them waiting on the Messiah to come, you know, from God to come. If someone shows up that they could put their trust in, then they do. And it's sad. You know, it's really sad. But then you have people like myself that are free thinkers. And I'm not just going to, you know, I like having all the information. I'm not just going to follow one individual, what they say. I have to have the information. And, you know, so I can make an educated and responsible decision about things that are going to affect my life. So what I do with my podcast, I like to give information, you know, credible information to my audience to help them in their lives make informed decisions, you know, about any situation. You know, it could only have to be religious and economic, you know, in religion and economics or science or whatever. It just could be everyday things. You want to have the best before you make a decision. You want to have the best, you want to have the most information possible. Now there's a push for people not to do their own research. I was looking at a news report in, you know, that was talking about people wanting to do their own research about the vaccine before they make a decision. And they had a doctor come on, black, you know, I think African-American in nature, even though she was kind of fair-skinned, telling people that they shouldn't do their own research, they should just listen to the experts. Okay. That's hard for me to do because you could be an expert at something, but there's other experts that have contrasting opinions about every subject, including taking the vaccine. So it's like a thing they want you to listen to who they pick for you to listen to and follow, and not do your own research and not, you know, and not look for information on your own. And that's dangerous. Again, that is a thing where, you know, they may be able to appeal to people who's looking for one person to solve all their problems. We have to solve our own problems. We can no longer sit around waiting for one leader to rise up or one person that we could follow that's going to lead us to the promised land. You know, we have to take responsibilities for our own lives and our own families and our own communities and work collectively together to enrich our lives, be it economic-wise, religious-wise, or social-wise, or whatever. We have to, you know, we have to get rid of this mentality of we looking for one individual and do everything because we're either scared to make, we're scared to do something, or we're just too lazy. You know, I listen to a lot of cats, you know, on in New Black Media. But I listen to differing opinions and diverse people, not just one individual. I even listen to the enemy. You know, you have to study your enemy as well. But I wanted to go over these two guys because, especially Jim Jones, because back then, these people, black people, majority, were lost because they put this trust, that all their trust hopes in this white man. And he was had them believing that he was God. And they were willing to die for him just because he said so. And that comes from, to me, it comes from a history of us being held in involuntary servitude, going through that trauma, you know, where you only put, you know, you're on the plantation and you put your trust in master, in the master or whatever, you know, something happens and then all of a sudden, you know, people are free and haven't had any therapy. So you send a dysfunctional people that were in bondage all of a sudden are free and they haven't received any kind of mental health. So the dysfunction is passed on generation to generation to generation. And you have the way we are today as a people. Because, you know, dysfunctional in a few different ways because, you know, we never receive any kind of healing or any kind of therapy. And to me, that's part of reparations. Reparations ain't only money. Reparations is us receiving a lot of things that are due us because of what we've gone through since we've been in this country, our ancestors and people that came before us, our people, you know, black people. I'll call foundational black Americans. You know, I'll say that. Not African Americans, but FBA, foundational black Americans, because that, you know, that leaves no wiggle room for anyone to clump us in with any other groups or no people of color or whatever. We're not people of color. We're not African Americans. We're foundational black Americans. So I'm going to close with that. And this is going to be the end of this episode. I hope you guys enjoy the information. There's a mechanism where if you want to donate to my podcast so I can do more research and begin to bring guests on my show and just expand the podcast to bring more information and, you know, just improve everything. You're more than welcome to donate. If you have ideas or you have topics you want me to cover or, you know, research and bring information to you guys, my email address is Larry Roundtree Jr. It is Larry Roundtree Jr. @gmail.com. Just drop me an email, leave a comment about the show, or if you have ideas, or if you, you know, encouraging words or opinions for or against any show. This is my third season. You can, once you click on the show, you'll be able to see where you can go back and view of my last two seasons, shows from previous seasons. Just go in, you know, pick a day or pick any episode and just listen. I think the great majority of my episode and my content is interesting. Again, this is L Boogie, and I'm gonna sign off. Look for more interesting and diverse content to come. And again, y'all be good to love one another. Be cool and love one another. And I'll holler at y'all again on another episode of Listen to L Boogie. Y'all be cool. Peace.